nearly 100 years after the Henry B. Smith freighter went down during a November storm in Lake Superior, a group of shipwreck hunters believes that it's found that ship. In fact, they're pretty darn sure they found that ship, and we have one of those hunters on the telephone right now, and that's Jerry Eliason, and Jerry is from Cloquet, and it's just such a pleasure to have you on the Roadhouse, Jerry.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I really enjoy talking shipwrecks. So
I imagine.
Anytime.
How long have you been involved with shipwrecks? How did you get interested in something like that?
Well, the original motivation goes back to when I was 5, 6 years old watching the old Lloyd Bridges Sea Hunt TV series. I couldn't imagine anything being more adventuresome than some of the things he did, so I got started scuba diving when I was 12 years old and then evolved into the shipwreck hunting as I got a little bit older.
You know, I'd kind of forgotten about that show, Lloyd Bridges, and that whole thing. Now I remember, and I was mentioning earlier on the show to my co-host that when I think of shipwrecks, of course, the first thing I think of is gold bullion and pieces of eight and, you know, the pirates. But you don't find many of those on Lake Superior.
No, that's none of the ones that we've ever found.
No.
Iron ore, general cargo are generally what they carry.
Exactly. And you just had a pretty major discovery with a ship the size of the freighter Henry B. Smith. How significant is this one? I know you had mentioned that to you it was, you know, one of the most satisfying finds that you've ever come across.
Yes, indeed. It wasn't a ship I even intended on looking for, simply because the information on where it went down was so scant. Essentially, the only thing to point you in a direction to where it might have gone down was where the wreckage came ashore between Marquette and Munising, Michigan, and whether it was 5 miles, 10 miles, 20 miles, 30 miles, 40 miles north or east of Marquette, there was really no solid evidence. So we didn't really have that on our agenda, because one of the things that we look at when we're determining what wreck to look for is whether it's findable or not. And since we didn't consider this one findable, we didn't really have it on our target list to look for.
Well, how did it happen that you decided, well, maybe we do have a chance here?
Well, that is a bit of a trade secret.
Okay.
we want the opportunity to exploit this on some other X, but we found for 3 years I'd been writing Freedom of Information Act requests to various branches of the federal government, and I never had any idea there were so many similar sounding but yet different branches. Like one of them was the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. But I was seeking some data specific to a wreck that we have been looking for in the Atlantic south of Cape Race, Newfoundland. The U-656, that was the first German U-boat sunk by U.S. forces in World War II. So ultimately, after several, we don't have the information you're looking for, but try this agency. We don't have the information looking for, try this other agency. Finally, had one that gave me access to a large treasure trove of data. And thanks to my wife's data analysis skills, we were able to write some formulas to interpret this data, and lo and behold, one of these places that said there should be or could be a shipwreck turned out to be right there, just 400 feet away from where my wife's formulas predicted it would be.
Wow. So it's not just a Ouija board, then. There's some science involved here.
Yes, yeah. It's I kind of had ideas what this data might be able to do, and we were able to see when we started analyzing it. I know the location of virtually every known shipwreck in Lake Superior. That I have a catalog of latitude, longitude coordinates for everything that's been found. So when we ran our analysis, we could quote-unquote see in the data some of those shipwrecks. So not all of them. I don't want anyone, you know, this probably is only going to work on about 10% of the undiscovered wrecks, but yet even with that, it gives us an inside track to some of these wrecks that were, you know, that we thought would never be found and never would start looking for.
Now, this particular one, I think it's 535 feet deep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to the bottom. Uh-huh. But it's amazing this ship comes up off the bottom a full 110 feet.
Oh.
The top of the bow mast. Yeah, it was a full 110 feet above the bottom.
Wow, it's a big ship.
Yeah, if people who have seen the William A. Irvin in Duluth,
mm-hmm.
Looks a lot like that. The Henry B. Smith isn't quite as big as the Irvin, but it's almost as big. So it's very similar in looking and appearance to the Irvin.
Huh. Were they like 800 feet or something like that?
Well, the Irvin, I think, is 620.
Oh, I see.
And the Henry B. Smith, some places it's recorded as 525, some places 529 in length. So,
and that went down on a very major storm. In fact, a storm that took a lot of ships down and a lot of sailors died.
Yeah, I think most Great Lakes historians would consider that 1913 storm to be the largest or worst ever on the Great Lakes, at least in terms of ships sunk and human lives taken. There were the major total losses on Lake Superior were the Henry B. Smith and the Lee Field, but Lake Huron and Lake Michigan also had losses. It was, I think it was 19 that total losses. And then there were lots of ships driven aground at the same time that were salvaged or weren't quite the same as the founderings out in the middle of the lake.
How exactly are you seeing this ship? Is it camera? Is it sonar? What are you seeing?
Oh, well, the when my son was getting ready to go to college, I told him, I said, as long as I'm going to be chipping in on your education here, I'm hoping you're going to pay attention in class and come up with a way to build a side-scan sonar for us. My son was 13 when he was along with us on his first successful shipwreck hunt, so he kind of got it in his blood. But so a couple years out of college, he said, well, here it is, Dad. Have fun with it. So we've been using that ever since. And then I've developed cameras. I've been building them. Much to my wife's chagrin, I've been building them in the living room.
Oh, like, yeah.
She'd probably prefer I did it down in the basement. But every time I build one, I realize little imperfections. So I come up with a little better idea. Then we lose them sometimes.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
On the wreck, they get you'll get snagged, and you have no recourse but to cut them off and leave them if you can't extract them.
So they drag way below your boat.
We drop them in. We've got a few different cables depending upon the depth we're going to be searching. Mm-hmm. We've got a 1,000-foot cable, a 700-foot cable, and a 350-foot cable.
Now this ship, the Henry B. Smith, what kind of shape is it in? What would you surmise made this boat break up?
In my opinion, it broke apart on the surface. I say that because the sonar imagery tells us that the iron ore field surrounding the wreck is huge in comparison to the size of the wreck. Because you can iron ore that falls into the bottom will make a real highly reflective sonar target, so it'll just glow. So for essentially 500 feet every direction from the wreck, the bottom just glows from this iron ore. And then we see it with the camera. So I think it broke apart on the surface. And my understanding is the Great Lakes boats are not designed to take the big, long period swells like the ocean boats, if they're built to a lower standard. Because for the most part, the Great Lakes have short, choppy waves.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of those long period swells. And I think you get a big enough storm that lasts as long for several days, like the 1913 storm, it builds up these long period swells that the Great Lakes boats just aren't made to handle,
mm-hmm.
at least those from the 1905. And then...
Okay. Let's see where I was going with this next one. How many wrecks have you found in Lake Superior?
In Lake Superior?
Yeah.
11 in Lake Superior.
Okay. So this was your 12th find?
We found 12 altogether. One of those was in the Atlantic.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So the Henry B. Smith was the 11th one that I participated in. One of the... guys that we go shipwreck hunting with, we joined forces with about 21, 22 years ago. Ken Merriman, he had found some ships before we teamed up, and then Craig Smith and I have been hunting wrecks together for 33 seasons, and we had found 3 wrecks before we teamed up with Ken. Ken was involved in finding the Kamloops on Isle Royale back
in
the mid-70s. Mid to later 70s.
What kind of, I know this one is too deep to really dive on, but what kind of rules are there about shipwrecks when you find them? Do you have, is it pretty much hands off?
Well, the Abandoned Shipwreck Act of 1987 allows, basically turns over all ownership of all abandoned shipwrecks to the state whose bottom land it is sitting on, and it's up to the states to protect them, so to speak, and all the states have laws against removing any artifacts. Now, and that's abandoned shipwrecks. Now, on the other hand, if you pursue salvage rights by getting ownership from the insurance companies who paid off on them, then there's controversy there, and they have more of that down in Lake Michigan. But, you know, as far as any value, I mean, it's a lot cheaper to mine 10 tons of iron ore out of the mines in northern Minnesota than try and haul it up from 535 feet of water.
So. Yeah, but relics like you might find on the Kamloops, in that case, does that belong to the park?
Yes, that's a special situation because of the national park.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so those are the national parks under their jurisdiction there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When I read about shipwrecks and I see a little map, it seems like Whitefish Bay is the killer area. Is that am I correct there? Is it, and why would that be?
Whitefish Bay has a high concentration of wrecks, but not because of storms. It's because of collisions.
Oh, really?
Every wreck in the vicinity of Whitefish Bay and Whitefish Point sank as a result of a collision. You know, you have all the ship traffic on the lake funneling down into a small area before radar going through there in a fog. You just had to hold your breath. And for every collision that there was, I'm sure, 100 almost crashes. But, you know, they're sailing in close quarters, and they'd run into each other. And that's how all the wrecks in the Whitefish Bay area got there. Oh, forgot about the Urania. The Urania went down as a result of ice, got trapped in the ice. But,
okay. When I read the article about you finding this ship, as part of reading that, I noticed you talked a little bit about zebra mussels, and you were fortunate there weren't zebra mussels there. Is that becoming a real problem with shipwrecks?
In all but Lake Superior. Now, it's kind of surprising now that back 30 years ago, Lake Superior had by far the best and clearest water for diving. Just crystal clear relative to the other lakes, with visibility typically being in that 50-60 foot range and could be up to 100 feet on a good day. Whereas the other lakes, like Lake Michigan, Lake Huron, they'd be in that 10-15 foot range. Hmm. Well, the zebra mussels have cleaned up those other lakes to a remarkable degree. So now Lake Michigan, Lake Huron are the clear lakes. So actually there's not as much diving in Lake Superior as there used to be. More people are staying at home from the Chicago, Milwaukee, Detroit area. But the benefit of the zebra mussels having cleaned the water up dramatically is that they've encrusted everything. So you'll see a shipwreck, but it's got globs of stuff on it, so things are hard to recognize. Like that ship's telegraph on the Henry B. Smith, there's not a zebra mussel there. The only zebra mussels in Lake Superior that are on any wreck that I know is on a wreck called the Wilson, just outside of the Duluth entry, about 3/4 of a mile. That one has a fair number of zebra mussels, but nothing like the other Great Lakes.
Is there another boat out there that intrigues you? Is there another one that you're going to, one more you'll try to go after?
Well, we have these targets, these data. We have these anomalies that we're going to be checking out to see if we were just lucky with the Henry B. Smith or if there are wrecks at these other anomaly locations that we've identified. And then the big one that we have on our agenda is to get back out to Newfoundland coming up, not this year, but sometime in the future. That U656, I think, has a lot of historic interest. That one went down in 1942. It was sunk by Lockheed Hudson, and some William Tapuni put it on the bottom. And it was the first German U-boat sunk by U.S. forces in World War II. They didn't really, they kept it quiet at that time about all the activity off the east coast of the U-boats, just kind of keep the public from getting too frightened and too worried. But there's a tremendous number of U-boat casualties. And the Germans were ahead something like 30 to 40 to nothing mm-hmm. when the that first German U-boat was sunk. And my son and I were fortunate enough to go down and interview, before he passed away a year ago, a gentleman who was on the destroyer USS Gleaves at the time that they went out to make sure that the U-boat was on the bottom still. So we were able to interview him, and he told us the whole story about the activities that followed the attack on the U-boat. So we just got to go out there and find that. We missed it on two trips, but we have one of these anomalies that I was telling you about in our data. The Henry B. Smith, I rated 8.7 on a 10 scale, and we have a 10 rated anomaly just a half a mile north and a couple hundred yards east of the line that the U-boat should be on. So
great.
Once we find that, I'll probably retire.
Well, we're going to look forward to you finding that. We'd love to speak with you again. We've been speaking with Jerry Eliason, and Jerry is from Cloquet. He and a group of his friends have found the remains of the freighter Henry B. Smith, which went down in Lake Superior almost 100 years ago. Jerry, I want to thank you so much for giving us your time tonight. It's been really interesting.
Thanks for calling, and it's a team thing. Craig Smith, Ken Merriman, Randy Beebe, these are all guys who, and my son, Jared, and my wife, Karen, they're all part and deserve every bit as much, if not more, credit than I do for finding the Henry B. Smith.
Great. Well, thank you so much.